Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. The phone lines to speak with Mike are open at 802-244-1777 and toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Here's your host, Mike Smith.
Thank you very much, Joel, and good morning, everyone. And thank you for joining us this morning. Today, I've set aside a lot of time on Open Mic to get your comments, to get your calls and opinions on what can only be described in the first half hour here. What were they thinking? Namely, the four U.S. swimmers making up a story about being attacked in Brazil. And then in politics, what was he thinking? Bernie Sanders being less than transparent with his finances. This is especially troubling for some people when Bernie Sanders has been so adamant about people being transparent, particularly Hillary Clinton being transparent with her finances. And under the category, what are you thinking? Why did you support either Sue Minter or Phil Scott? Or why didn't you support them? We'll discuss that in the second hour. And plus, lots of other issues that I have not gotten to this week, or issues that may be on your mind that we haven't spoken to. I've opened up the whole final hour, or 45 minutes, to that discussion. And in between, we'll talk with Lloyd Komisser of the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival and our colleagues at Talk Media News. But let's start out with the issue of the Olympic swimmers. International incident, and then we'll turn to Vermont and Bernie Sanders. But it looks like, from today's reports, it looks like they made a lot of this up, the four swimmers. U.S. swimmer Ryan Locke's account of being robbed at gunpoint, it's just started to unravel. And Thursday night, the Rio police, his teammates, and even the U.S. Olympic Committee said, this doesn't all add up. Now, you remember what the original story was. The original story was that these Mr. Locke and these three other people were on their way back, and they were swimmers, were on their way back from a party early Sunday morning and were held up by men posing as police officers. But that account is starting to unravel with witnesses and surveillance video that perhaps many of you have already seen. And the U.S. Olympic Committee issued an apology yesterday. It says, on behalf of the United States Olympic Committee and the people of Rio and the people of Brazil, that they apologize for this distracting ordeal in the midst of what should rightly be a celebration of excellence. We will further review the matter and any potential consequences of the athletes when we return to the United States. And what is happening out there and what is interesting is this has turned into an international sort of an international event, because the allegations against the swimmers underscored Brazil's sort of sensitivity to the international criticism of the Olympic Games that have these organizational snafus, that they have security fears. And Brazilians were understandably upset. And I had one quote here from an editor of a news magazine that said, the sense of shame became a kind of sense of anger Brazilians took extreme measures to guarantee some form of order and peace, at least throughout the games. And when this happened, and then finding out it's false, it is an international event. Now, what we know so far is that by a security guard that's interviewed by police and the swimmers who broke from the story of Mr. Locke, the swimmers broke a soap dispenser and towel dispenser in a restroom, in a gas station restroom, prompting security guards who called the police. The swimmers then attempted to leave the gas station and became aggressive with employees when they were prevented from going. This prompted at least two security guards to pull a gun and ordered the swimmers to get down on the ground, according to testimony made public. And one of the things that I was reading the Washington Post this morning, and a columnist, she's a great columnist, Sally Jenkins, probably posed the best question that I'll ask you to respond to if you desire to. And that is the question, is there anything worse in a country than entitled young drunks who break the furniture and pee on the wall? There is no translator needed for that one. No cultural norm that excuses it. If I had been working at that Brazilian station, I might have pulled a gun on them too. So as Jenkins points out, you know, there's a lot of robberies of Olympic athletes and officials. For example, a New Zealand athlete was kidnapped by fake police and driven to ATMs. Two Australian coaches were robbed at knife point. British and track officials say some of their competitors were robbed. So the police are very, very sensitive about this. And what these Americans do is minimize the real dangers that pose other competitors at the Olympics. And they've created an international event. So what do you think? What do you think we should do here? I mean, it's... Why would they lie about these events? Is it youthful indiscretion? But they're not that young. Is it just being arrogant? Or is it a sense of privilege that as a world-class competitor, you can do anything, you can say anything, you can do anything without ramifications? Or is Lockie, the one who said that he had a gun to his head, or is Lockie just weird? Or as some young person said, isn't it? It's good that he has swimming because he isn't too bright with other events. So give me a call. Tell me what you think at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. And as you ponder sort of all the questions that I'm asking about this event, let's turn to Bernie Sanders, because Vermont Digger has been doing some great work. And yesterday they had a pretty hard-hitting article about Bernie avoiding disclosing his finances. And one of the things that this article was written by David Leventhal, who is from the Center of Public Integrity, and that's a nonprofit, nonpartisan investigative news organization based in D.C. And what the story talks about is that Bernie Sanders has been very adamant that there needs to be political transparency, particularly with Hillary Clinton. He has been very harsh on Hillary Clinton in terms of what is going on with her finances, particularly what she got from her Wall Street talks, I guess you would say, the $250,000 talk. So he's been very adamant. But when federal law required Sanders to reveal by mid-May details of his personal finances, he asked for, or his campaign asked for, a 45-day extension. That was granted. And then in June 30th, after the 45 days was coming up, he asked for another extension, which was granted. But now that he's not running for president, he doesn't have to disclose his personal finances under this requirement. Now, there's requirements under the Senate rules that he needs to disclose his finances, but not under the presidential rules. And the crux of this article says that, and here's a quote, Sanders expertly exploited a system that effectively allowed him to delay, all the while he chided Clinton's receipt of six-figure paydays for delivering closed-door speeches to officials at investment bank Goldman Sachs and other powerful special interests. By the way, both Clinton and Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump did file their financial disclosures on time in May without asking for extensions. And one of the things that this article and an AP article ask is, why didn't he do that? Why didn't he file his financial disclosures? And especially, you know, you sort of live by the sword, you die by the sword. If you're saying everything should be transparent, then you got to be transparent. The other thing that is in Vermont Digger today, and it's another great article, is on the land purchase in North Hero, Sanders' land lake home purchase. The title is Sanders' Lake Home Purchase Leaves Questions Unanswered. And Bernie Sanders, the wife of Bernie Sanders, was unwilling Wednesday to explain how the couple purchased a Vermont lakeside home using proceeds from a Maine company. The two parcels have roughly the same value. However, she was only a part owner of the Maine property. And so, look, what people do with their money is fine. If they want to purchase a home, no problem. But if you're a public official and you're talking about transparency, don't you have to be transparent? And if you look at this article, there's a lot of questions that still remain. What Mrs. Sanders has said is that she purchased it by using, it was paid in cash. They purchased it by using some of the proceeds from the book that Bernie Sanders is going to do, some retirement money, and some the money from the main property, which I think it was like $150,000. The purchase price of the North Hero home is $575,000. So let me ask you this question. Do you think Bernie Sanders needs to be more open with his financial disclosure or not? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We're under the category, first thing coming out of the blocks this morning. What were they thinking? What were those four swimmers in Brazil thinking when they made this story up? And number two, what is Bernie Sanders thinking when he rails on financial disclosure with others, but fails to have the same level of scrutiny with himself? Let's go to Bill in Barry. Bill, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. I'm appalled at what those swimmers were doing. That was one of my sports in high school, and I would never even have thought of taking a drink during. See, I'm representing a school, a town, or whatever. And when I was in college, I was on the wrestling team, and I wrestled against an Olympian, and I admired that guy tremendously. Oh, he beat me a couple of times, but I admired him. None of us ever would have even thought of taking the drink in the first place, much less getting drunk during season. But what I wanted to say mostly is the person who I admire the most who has been in the Olympics, and it's a person who never even won a race, was that lady. I think she was from Vermont. I don't know her name. Maybe you do. That when they fell, she fell in a race and helped the other person picked that person up, and they finally ended up crossing the finish line. And those people, that lady, I admire the most of anyone that's been in the Olympics.
Yeah, Bill, that's a very good point. I mean, what happened is an American runner and a New Zealand runner got tangled up. The New Zealand runner and the American runner went down. The New Zealand runner was on the ground for a little while. The American runner helped her up, and they started running. And as they were running, the American runner's knee gave out, and she went down. The New Zealand runner stopped, came back, and helped her up, and they both finished the race. It was certainly an Olympic moment. And, Bill, thank you for your phone call. So the questions we're asking today are, what were those Americans thinking of? Were they just privileged and felt they could do anything and get away with anything? And what should we do with them? And then the other thing is Bernie Sanders. Sort of live by the sword, die by the sword here. You know, you ask other people to be transparent in their finances. You ask Hillary Clinton to be transparent in their finances. And you aren't in your own finances? Does that raise a concern to you? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. I mean, this story about Bernie Sanders has been picked up by the AP as well, you know, and this is not going to go away. I see that Jane Sanders has talked to the Associated Press. She did not talk in a transparent way to Vermont Digger, but she has talked, and she said, you know, we bought it by purchasing this property in North Hero at $575,000 with $150,000 that she got from having her share bought out in a camp in Maine, plus a book advance, plus retirement money. But that's about all that's being said. And again, I don't begrudge anybody that's going to buy a house or buy a second house or, for that matter, buy a third house. That's not what this discussion is about. This discussion is about whether, if you're railing against other people to be transparent, do you have a responsibility to be transparent as well? Or does it look like it's do as I say, not as I do? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. One of the things about the swimmers that you just got to sit there and ask is, why would they make this up? And if they did make it up, look, there were guns pulled. There was a confrontation, but it was after they smashed up a restroom. And it was security guards that did this. And they paid the money. They thought it was extortion. So it is an interesting, I just find this fascinating of why they would make this story up. They did something wrong. They got caught. They paid the money. They called it extortion. But what really just baffles me is why they would make this story up. And also, we're talking about Bernie Sanders. Hey, if you demand financial transparency, don't you have to demand it on yourself as well? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Fred in Waitsfield. Fred, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Nice to speak with you. Please remind me and all of us of the details, as you know them, of Jane Sanders and her departure from the college down in Burlington. Didn't she get sort of a golden parachute when she left there, and then the college had to go bankrupt? Now listen.
Yeah, Fred, I only know what I've read in the newspaper about that. As you may know, Fred, I was there for 4 months to try to help that college survive, gave it a sort of master plan in order to help it survive. But I only know about this what I've read in the newspaper. Jane Sanders did get a $200,000 severance package at the time of her departure from as president of Burlington College. So I don't know if that plays into it or not. You ask me a question, give you an answer, thank you, and let's move on and talk about other things as well, which is the thing I really want to concentrate on here is there a hypocrisy between demanding certain things from other people and not yourself? You know, one of the things that I picked up, and we'll talk about it later if we get some time, but there was a, and I'm trying to find it here, there was a op-ed or a column by Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal this morning, and it was sort of an add-on to her column of last week, which was entitled "How Global Elites Forsake Their Countrymen." And if we get time towards the end of the program, we'll get into that. But she wrote a line here that is just doesn't apply here. And her line is, "History is human. Political leaders are driven by personal issues every bit as much and as often more than public ones." So what she's saying is the motivation is driven by personal aspects of it, not necessarily political aspects of it. And so the motivation is here, I can say others need to disclose their financial information, but I don't have to do it because it's personal. And it's interesting sort of development here, and you got to give Vermont Digger a lot of credit, Jasper Craven, Mark Johnson, for digging into this and finding out. You also got to give Vermont Digger a lot of credit for republishing that article that talks about the lack of transparency that the Bernie campaign had in sort of releasing its financial information. And this isn't some, you know, off-the-wall organization that's going after Bernie Sanders. This is the Center for Public Integrity. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan investigative news organization based in D.C. So those are some of the issues that we're going to discuss today. And I would love your phone calls on this at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Coming up, we're going to speak with Lloyd, and I'm going to try not to butcher his name. It's Kosmisser, who is heading up, along with Jay Craven, by the way, the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival. And we'll do that discussion in just a moment. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Thank you for joining us this morning. Our first segment, we've been talking about two events that we're just scratching our heads. What were they thinking? First, the four American athletes in Rio who made up a story about being robbed. And then secondly, Bernie Sanders and what was he thinking about demanding sort of personal responsibility in disclosing finances with others, but not necessarily himself. And I want to just finish up because I know I have had some calls waiting. Coming up, I'm going to speak about the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival. And the person I want to speak with is on the line, and I know that. But I want to make sure I clear the phone calls from the last segment. So Nick in Florence. Nick, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Hello. Well, in listening to you, I was wondering, the timing of this seems very vulnerable for Bernie and his whole campaign, and or his support for Hillary. And I'm wondering, could it be a strategy in order to show such a blatant lack of clarity with his finances, it would let the Bernie supporters lose love enough to accept Hillary.
Could be, Nick. That's an excellent point. I mean, it's all's fair in love and war, and especially in politics. And that's an excellent point that you may want to make. But why fall into it? Why not just sort of, you know, you're making it easy for them. Why not release the financial data?
Well, like I said, if your strategy is to weaken Bernie's supporters, you know, their absolute support, why not? Why wouldn't he put this house off for a few more months, and it wouldn't even be an issue? I just think that there's a lot of supporters out there for Bernie who just can't see supporting Hillary because they were so in love with the idea of Bernie, and this would taint his, this would taint him just enough that they could maybe get over that hump and then turn to Hillary as their only choice.
Nick, some good points here. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Nick in Florence. Up next, let's open up the line for Lloyd. Lloyd, I'm going to try not to butcher your last name. And it's Commissar, right?
It's Commissar, yes.
Commissar, okay.
That's right.
Lloyd Commissar, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Lloyd, what is the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival, and what's its purpose?
Well, this is the second annual Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival coming up next week, August 25 to 28. We founded it last year, Jay Craven, the artistic director, and myself, really as a platform for first and second time filmmakers to sort of the emerging voices in filmmaking to sort of create a level playing field, because the festival is completely dedicated to them. And, you know, we're finding that it's quite a nurturing place. The exposure is great. Our audiences are very, very receptive. And I think the reason we founded it is because many times at film festivals, new films by first and second time filmmakers don't really get the kind of exposure or traction that they deserve. And this year we had 370 submissions. The quality of the films is superb. And the number of films submitted is up by about 15-16% over our inaugural year. So we seem to be getting some traction with this particular niche. And we're enjoying ourselves in creating and developing this festival.
Lloyd, there's a growing number of film festivals out there. You just talked about having 300 submissions. What attracts these submissions to your festival?
Well, I think it's the niche. Again, since we are focused completely on just first and second time filmmakers, there is, I think, a growing realization that this is sort of a home for them, that we are, you know, we're completely dedicated to them. We're here for them. We try to create a festival that really celebrates their work. Because what you're alluding to is the number of film festivals is tremendous. It's huge. It continues to grow. So unless you create something that has a very clear, distinctive niche, it's hard to get traction. I think we are, because of our sort of sole focus on new filmmakers.
And as we talk about these films, what type of films are we talking about?
Well, we are pretty agnostic when it comes to genre. So we are incorporating documentary, both feature-length and short, our narrative films, both drama and comedy, animation, experimental work. Really, it's just we set the bar high for quality, and then, as I said, we're pretty agnostic when it comes to genre. We use two platforms that have a global reach in terms of getting our submissions. One is called Without a Box, and the other is called Film Freeway. And between the two platforms, they reach probably 500,000 filmmakers around the world. So when we create a listing on these platforms, we're able to reach so many filmmakers, and it's sort of reflected in the range of films that we have, because our festival is quite global. So, I mean, this year, in addition to our complement of U.S. films, we have films from the U.K., from Denmark, Germany, Australia, Iran, China, France, Canada. So it's without calling ourselves international or global, we are. And so there's a great diversity and range in the films that we present here in Middlebury.
Lloyd, I'm just curious. We call it a filmmakers festival. Is there any film anymore? Or is it all digital?
Yeah, well, so digital has made it possible for so many more people to make film. That, I mean, it's democratized the process to such a great extent that. So, I mean, the explicit answer to your question is very few people make film on film, and it's because digital has opened the doors to so many other efforts. And that's the way it goes. I mean, you know about films that get made on cell phones, which can be really good and can break through. I mean, there are examples of those out there. We look at the budgets of the films that get submitted to Middlebury New Filmmakers, and they range widely. Someone can produce an excellent film for $5,000. Do people spend more? Yes, of course. And a lot of the, you know, when you take on a more ambitious approach, you'll spend more money. But the beauty of digital is it allows other voices to really get in the game, and we are really happy to see a lot of these voices, and have selected quite a few of these for our festival.
Out of the 300 or so submissions you had, how many do you select?
Well, this year we have 77 films that we will screen over the 3 days. You know, our total submission was closer to 400. It was around just over 370 films. Of the 77 films, eight of the films are curated. Again, they're all by first or second time filmmakers. And by curated, I mean that we bring them into the festival. They didn't come to us in the submission process, but we want to recognize the quality of these films. But at this point, what I would say is that represents 10%. 90% of our films come to us through our submission process, which is great. You know, we really work hard. We screen all the films. We rate the films. And then we make our final selections and create a schedule.
I'm curious, when you sit down and watch these films, what are you looking for?
Well, I think, you know, it starts with certainly the quality of the writing, the directing. The storytelling is critical. The cinematography is important. The acting is, you know, obviously very important. You can have a great script, but sometimes the acting will just sort of kill that. You can have great acting, but the script may not be up to it, so the movie really never gets any lift. So there are a number of classic elements that go into creating a really good film. And I think, just speaking for Jay Craven, who, you know, is one of Vermont and New England's greatest filmmakers, you know, he has an eye which has developed over more than 30 years of making and looking at films. And I think, and I've looked at quite a few in my life as well, and I think that there's sort of a critical sense that you take into this that helps inform your judgment about what makes for a very good film. And the beauty part of this is to see first and second time filmmakers produce incredibly high quality work is just thrilling, honestly. I mean, I don't mean to exaggerate, but when you come across so many films that have a very complete vision and terrific execution and they're beautifully shot and often with marvelous scores, you just sort of say, great, tip your hat. And it's just great stuff. And that's what we're trying to sort of honor and celebrate in the festival. And believe me, with 370 submissions, we had more than enough terrific films that we're able to select for the festival.
We're speaking with Lloyd Kosemar, and we're talking about the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival. And if you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or free at 877-291-8255. Lloyd?
Yeah.
I'm fascinated with your background. Can you give us a little insight into your background?
Well, I spent 30 years in television and film production, distribution, and 25 of those were at the Walt Disney Company, both in New York and in Los Angeles. And I worked with sort of the same group in film and television distribution for those 25 years. It was a great group. And, you know, Disney is an amazing corporation to work for, amazing company, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, cultural brand. And it was really for a pleasure, honestly, and a great sort of unending learning experience. And I took a lot of that with me when I finally retired, which was back in late January of 13, 25 wonderful years, and was happy and to have done that and sort of look back on my time at Disney very, very fondly and stay in touch with many of the people I worked with. You know, so the film and television distribution part of that serves me well now in sort of putting together a festival that we hope will become a world-class festival.
What does it take to put together one of these festivals? It must be an enormous undertaking.
Well, that is true. That is true. There's so many pieces that go into this sort of in a sequential way, but it all starts, I think, with the gathering of films through the submission process. And once you have got the films and you're looking at the films, you start to make some preliminary judgments about what will work and those that won't. Our window for submission opened in early January, and it didn't close until the end of May. So over that period of time, filmmakers from around the world have plenty of time to submit their films, and it gives us time to sort of start looking at them. And then the process begins to accelerate after May 31. We then wrap up our viewing, our screening, and the films are then sent to Jay Craven. Jay makes final decisions on the films that we will accept. And usually by the first or second week of July, we've informed our filmmakers if they're accepted or not. And then comes the process of really putting the nuts and bolts of the festival together. You create a schedule. You really stay after these filmmakers to send in their films to us. We test all of our films. Of course, we market extensively, both in print. Obviously, we do social media. We have a terrific social media presence on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and it's increasingly important that you do that. So there's a whole marketing component to this. And finally, I think as you get down toward the stretch, once your schedule is set, you start to lay in other events. And we have many key events I'd like to talk about that make the festival just special. So it's a continuous process. I do want to say a couple things about the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival that I think, are unique. We take our winning films out on tour, and we've created something called the New England Tour, and we say to our winning filmmakers that we'd like to give you the valuable additional exposure at great venues around New England that you deserve. And we did our first one last year. We went to all six of the New England states. We showed our winning films in really good venues, and this year we'll do the same thing. It's sort of a way of distinguishing our festival from others. We think we stand out in this way, and it's sort of our commitment to filmmakers extends throughout the year, and so the festival is one key part. During these 4 days here in August, we have a winter screening series that we do at the Town Hall Theater in Middlebury. This year we'll be screening one film per month from January to May that we bring in by first or second time filmmakers, and our winning films are out on tour. Usually in April and May. So it's a year-round thing. So we build the festival, but then we augment it with these other special things that we do throughout the year.
Lloyd, when we come back, what I want to sort of turn to the filmmaker and what they get from the festival. We're speaking with Lloyd Komisar.
We'll call it Komisar.
Komisar. How's that?
Thank you. That's better.
Komisar. We're speaking with Lloyd Komisar, we're talking about the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival. And when we return, I want to turn to what's in this for the filmmaker. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Lloyd Komisar, who is with the Middlebury New Film Fest. Let me start over again. Who's with the Middlebury New Film Fest. Makers Festival. Sorry, Lloyd, about that. It's Friday. I guess I'm just out of juice here. let's turn to the filmmaker.
Yeah.
Because what I'm fascinated about is, what is the purpose of a film festival for the filmmaker?
Well, I think for new filmmakers, getting exposure, having a festival that's completely dedicated to them is a special thing. I mean, if we look at the breakdown this year of our films, three of them are U.S. premieres. 10 are premiering for the first time on the East Coast or New England. And 34 are Vermont premieres. So what we're offering is a place where, for many, it's the first time their films have been seen in the region. And this is valuable exposure for them. filmmakers at a festival like ours are on a level playing field for the most part, right? They're not competing against filmmakers who are doing their fifth or sixth or seventh film, who usually have very large budgets, with sort of an established career. For the most part, our filmmakers are sort of at that cusp where the exposure is very important for them. And so is the idea of getting together with other filmmakers, sort of exploring each other's work, talking. We'll have more than 40 filmmakers here this year. And all of them will be doing question and answer sessions after their film screen so they can interact with audiences. And what we found last year, Mike, is that filmmakers go to see each other's films. They're very supportive, very quite interested in what their peers are doing. So in that respect, it is a peer festival. As I said, it's a level playing field. It's a place where folks who are the emerging voices in independent filmmaking can get together and sort of share stories and support each other. It's very dynamic, actually, when everybody gets together here, and there's a real lift that comes out of it. But the idea of 34, almost half of our films being Vermont premieres is special. And in fact, I mean, you'll only see them, I think, for the most part, here at the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival.
And where did these filmmakers come from? What's their background? Is it film school? Is it some other background?
Well, I think that's true. There are folks who have gone to film school, but I think that there are many who don't. I'll give you an example. We have a film called Sunday 1287. It's been directed by Brandon Del Pozo, who is the police chief of Burlington, Vermont. It's a great film, terrific short film. We're going to show it on Sunday of the festival. And, Brandon is not a filmmaker, has not gone to be previously, has not gone to film school, as many of your audience know, perhaps from reading the piece in 7 days, his background is quite different. And he, like many others, has a passion for film and has brought that, to his work. So I think, let's go back to the idea of digital. Digital makes it possible for people to give expression to the ideas that they have. And they, if they find success, they then can grow perhaps into a more established career in filmmaking. I mean, that's really what our festival is all about. It's folks at that inflection point where they're hoping that their films will be seen, perhaps picked up for distribution, and that they'll move on to something greater, bigger, the next project. So that's where we are. We are sort of at that point where these emerging voices are getting heard and getting recognized, and then they move from there. So it's a very diverse background that people bring to this festival, I must say. And some folks are not 25, 28. We have many filmmakers who have had other careers and have decided that filmmaking is a place they want to go. I mean, last year we had a 92-year-old filmmaker who came to us from Minneapolis, St. Paul. He was a great addition to the festival, and his film was terrific. It just took him a long time to make it.
Lloyd, do other film festivals scope out your film festival?
Well, we're finding that's true this year, as a matter of fact. We have other film festivals who are coming, who are interested, and it's great. Not only us, the folks from Green Mountain Film Festival coming, and the Rhode Island Film Festival is coming here. We have some folks coming from the Jacob Burns Film Center down in Westchester in Pleasantville, New York. So, yes, I think the answer is yes. I think last year we were very, very new. But this year I think the word is getting out and others are curious about what we do. I did want to mention one thing to you, Mike, and that is when I talked about 34 of the films having Vermont premieres, we have also a very strong contingent of films made here in Vermont or by Vermont filmmakers. If you wouldn't mind, I'd just like to mention a few of those.
Sure,
because
we're
interested in supporting the work of filmmakers from Vermont. There is a terrific film called Hunt Watch, a documentary about the killing of the harp seals in Canada. And Carrie Brannan, who is the producer of the film, she will be here. We have a great film called Coming Through the Rye, a beautiful narrative drama by Jim Sadwith, who lives down in Woodstock, Vermont. He will be here. We have some short films, including Unspoken, which was made in Rutland. Lambing Season, Andrew Baker's film. He's a Middlebury grad. He's also here in Vermont. Drug Mule by Sharon McGuire. Zephyr by Liam O'Connor. And then we have, and Peter and the Farm, if I could just speak for a second about this amazing film. Peter and the Farm, a documentary by Tony Stone, produced by Melissa Altomare. This will be the Vermont premiere for this film. It's about a Vermont farmer, Peter Dunning, who lives north of Brattleboro. And it's an amazing document about this particular individual. It's a one-of-a-kind kind of film. It'll screen here on Saturday night at 7:15 at the festival. Tony Stone, the director, is also a Vermonter, and the subject, Peter Dunning, is a Vermonter. And then finally, we have a compilation of films by the Vermont Freedom and Unity Competition. These are young people, teenagers, who take their filmmaking very seriously, and we're going to be screening 8 selections from Vermont Freedom and Unity on Sunday morning. So I think it's really, for us, we're very supportive of efforts here in Vermont and want to celebrate them whenever possible.
What do you get by winning this festival?
Well, our the first prize you get is our beautiful V-Teddy Award. Now, the V-Teddies, and that's capital V, capital T-E-D-D-Y, the V-Teddy Awards were created by our sponsor, the Vermont Teddy Bear Company. I think it's our version of the Oscar. And it's a bear that's mounted on a lovely platform. The bear is dressed up in a tuxedo, you know, with a boutonniere and a handkerchief. You know, they're wonderful. They're glamorous. And we love them. They've been very iconic. And we've noticed on social media that the V-Teddies are getting a lot of play. So the winners get the V-Teddies, of course. And then, as I said to you earlier, we take them on tour. Mm-hmm. Our winning films go out on tour, and they get the quite valuable additional exposure all across New England next spring. And we find that this works. We're attracting audiences around New England who are really quite interested in what we're offering, and it brings the filmmakers, as I said, sort of that those connections that they wouldn't otherwise have. If you're an indie filmmaker, you know, it's important to stand behind your film. It's important to get additional exposure and get yourself out there, because it's a very tough biz, and what we're doing, I think, is helpful in this regard. So, yes, you get your award here, but then we go on to promote you all across New England.
Lloyd, I got about 45 seconds left.
Sure.
Where and when will this be held, and where can you get more information?
Okay, so the festival is next week, August 25th to 28th, and you can get tickets at our website and passes. That's midfilmfest.org, M-I-D-D, midfilmfest.org. Or you can visit the Town Hall Theater box office, both here in Middlebury or by going to their website, townhalltheater.org, and you can buy passes there. Our opening night film is sold out, but we encourage people to get their festival passes. They're $75. You can see any of the films, any of the 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Or you can buy day passes, which gets you into any of the film on a particular day, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. They're $28. Well worth it. Great films here this year, Mike. And I hope you'll come down and sample what we're doing, because I think we have a terrific festival.
Lloyd, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks.
That's Lloyd Kosomar, who is heading up, along with Jay Craven, the Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival. Sounds like a great place to go and great place to be. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. Coming up, our friends at Talk Media News. And then it's Free for All Friday. Anything that you want to talk about, we'll have in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We'll turn our attention to national issues. And on the line is the head honcho of Talk Media News, Ellen Ratner. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning to you. I'll tell you, boy, we've got troubles in Rio, and it's not from somebody that's still there. Some gold medalists that left and lied and doesn't make the United States look good. United States Olympic Committee actually apologized to the folks in Rio, but I don't know what's going to happen.
This is an interesting story. We started out the program today with this story in particular, because it's more than a few people lying. It is an international event now.
Well, it certainly has turned into that, and the fact is that these guys were allowed to leave. Of course, two of them, they were taken off a plane, and then they were now allowed to leave. But the main guy is still, he hasn't even apologized.
Yeah, it is troubling, to say the least. What do you think sort of promotes this behavior, the entitlement aspect
of it? Alcohol.
Alcohol. I mean, one of the things that I read this morning, Ellen, which was, well, it was actually yesterday that I read it, you know, a longtime expert in U.S. and Brazilian relations said that the incident has been explosive because it fuels the stereotypes on both sides. The Americans who think that Brazil is a lawless, no man's land, and Brazilians who see the U.S. as a better than thou power with little respect for its institutions. And
that's right. And this has brought it to, certainly, as you say, to the forefront of an international incident. It's not pretty.
It would seem to me that Lockheed would, the Olympic Committee would force Lockheed to do at least an apology the same way that they did.
That's right. And he should actually, in my view, he should go around and talk to kids about drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here he is, a superstar, you know, the second swimmer who has won more medals, 12 medals he's won. And he gets drunk and does what he did?
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm trying to find the story here, but, you know, one of the columnists of the Washington Post, Sally Jenkins, she hit it on the head when she said, and this was in her column today in the Washington Post, it said, is there anything worse in any country than a bunch of entitled young drunks who break the furniture and pee on the wall? I mean, that sort of says it all.
The problem is that Lockheed is not very young. He's in his 30s.
Yeah, which is one of the things that I brought up today. These aren't that young of people. I mean, they're, you can say...
Yeah, we're not talking about 18 to 20-year-olds.
That's
for
right.
Most part.
Yeah, they're over 22, and, you know, you should know better by then, it seems to me. What else is going on, Ellen?
Okay, well, it's very interesting. You know, Hillary Clinton testified privately before the FBI 3 hours. Now Congress has some of that testimony, and one of the things that she apparently said in the testimony is that she met with Colin Powell, and Colin Powell told her to do it. Well, what's fascinating is, first of all, Colin Powell had his private server or whatever, and it wasn't in his house. He had an AOL account in 2001. That's before the enormous hacking that has now happened. And so, you know, she's a little on thin ice, as Donald Trump is on thin ice, because he did apologize for things that he said were offensive to people. Now, it's interesting, the Washington Post this morning has an article where they looked at all of his television shows where he promised to pay for these things personally, contributions to various nonprofit groups that his people that he was throwing off the show wanted, and he didn't make any of them personally. They were all given by the show.
It is amazing to me that we are where we are with this presidential election. We have, it seems to me, emails that are only, it's drip, drip, drip on these emails, and it's going to continue, it seems, and everybody's sort of bracing themselves for the big bombshell. And then you have Donald Trump, who says he wants to be Donald Trump, and isn't that one of the things that's gotten him in trouble? We have the emails getting Hillary in trouble. We have Donald Trump being Donald Trump, getting himself in trouble.
Right. Neither of these are stellar candidates, for sure.
What else is happening down there?
Okay. Now there's a lot of talk about the private prison situation with the Department of Justice. They are going to close 13 private prisons, or there's actually, I don't know that they're going to close all 13. I think they are, when their contracts come up. 22,000 federal prisoners are held. And what's so fascinating about all of that is that there is a much higher rate of prisoner-to-prisoner assault, prisoner-to-guard assault in the private prisons.
And what is the controversy behind that? Is that the cost of
it? Well, there isn't really any controversy except that, of course, these guys are big lobbyists. The private prison, this does not deal with state prisons, the private prison population is $3.3 billion into the U.S. economy. That's a lot of money.
And finally, anything else that would be about?
Well, the Zika virus, as you know, it's in Miami Beach. There is some question as to whether the long-term effects in adults somehow affect the brain. What we do know is that obviously it affects unborn children, et cetera. But now there's some research that's being done on mice or rats, I don't remember which, showing that it could affect long-term brain issues in adults, perhaps making learning new issues difficult. That would not be pretty.
This has sort of spilled over into the Senate, into the Republican Senate race in Florida as well. I mean, into the Senate race in Florida, in that Rubio and Republicans down there are saying, Congress, do something about this. Help us. And yet there seems to be a stalemate in D.C.
There does seem to be a stalemate in D.C. on this. And the question is the funding. The president's going to release some funding from somewhere else to begin to take care of it.
Ellen Ratner, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Okay.
That's Ellen Ratner, the head honcho of Talk Media News. Coming up, it's Free for All Friday. It's your calls on anything you want to do. I've got some things here that I'll throw out. We've been talking about the four Americans in Rio that sort of made up, concocted a story, and the international ramifications of that. And also Bernie Sanders being, I don't know, what do you think? A little bit... do as I say and not do as I do because of how he talks about what others should do with their own financial information and yet being a little bit cagey with his own financial information. But also, why did Sue Minter and Phil Scott win? Why did you vote for them or why didn't you vote for them? If you have an opinion, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255 on any of those subjects or anything you want to talk about, because after all, it's Free for All Friday. It's your program to call in on anything that you wish to do. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's Free for All Friday. The last 40 minutes or so, it's your program. Give us a call on issues that you think are important. It's up to you. Anything and everything's on the line here. We have been talking this morning about the sort of situation in Rio and what's going on in Rio and how that is turned into an international incident. We've talked about Bernie Sanders and why isn't he being more transparent in his financial disclosures? And in a minute we'll talk about why did Sue Minter and Phil Scott win? Why did you vote for them? Or why didn't you vote for them? Some of the issues that we're talking about today, plus other issues that I haven't gotten to in the week. But I want to take some phone calls here. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. And in about 4 minutes, I have somebody else that's going to be joining us here in studio. But let's turn to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. Within the next 5 years, the biggest political issue in the country is going to be personal encryption.
Similar to what happened, I guess, let me ask you this. Here's what I think you're saying, is that cell phones, communications in terms of your personal communications now are getting sophisticated encryption capabilities, and they're becoming unhackable by security organizations like the National Security Administration, the FBI, those sort of things. Is that what you're talking about, Fred?
Yeah, but you can't use the word hack because you hack machines. You don't hack encryption. Encryption is a whole different ballgame. If you don't have the key, you're not going to get into it. Right now, they have encryption out now that you can buy that's relatively easy to use, that it would take a nation state to be able to break the code. And that's going to be pervasive. They're going to have all your data will be able to be encrypted. So when the police come into your house to take your computer out and your hard drive out, they're going to have a gigantic problem. You're going to have to be a gigantic big fish for them to be willing to spend the resources to break the code.
Fred, thank you. This is what Free for All Friday is all about. Different issues, different things. What's on your mind? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Ruth and Sheldon. Ruth, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, united we stand, divided we fall. And I think Republicans keep shooting themselves in the foot because they criticize each other instead of criticizing the Democrats. Now, you say this should be an easy year for the Republicans to win the White House.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep criticizing Republicans. We're not bringing out what the Democrats are doing. And that's what we need to do, and we need to stick together. That's what Democrats do. They will fight for stand with a Democrat no matter how awful they are. They won't criticize them.
But do you think that's good, Ruth? Do you think
I think it's terrible. I think it's terrible that the Democrats stay united and will vote for people who are bad, who don't represent how they truly feel. Away from the Democratic Party.
But Ruth, what you're saying is that Republicans should emulate that, and you just said that's terrible.
Well, they shouldn't be. They should be criticizing the Democrats, not each other.
Thank you for your phone call.
We shouldn't be wasting all our time talking about what Donald Trump said here, Donald Trump said there. We should be talking about what the Democrats are doing, and it's terrible. The health care system is falling apart. We should be talking about that.
I agree with you. And if we had a nominee that would stick to those issues instead of name calling, maybe we would be talking about that. But Ruth, I guess I don't agree with you. If we're going to stick thick and thin no matter what kind of party are we? Or what kind of party are the Republicans? Think about that. I mean, what if it's so terrible, Ruth, that the Democrats are sticking together, and that's awful, in your opinion, then why is it that the Republicans should do the same? So we're talking about a whole host of issues, and I want to bring in somebody here that can add some of the conversation, kind of talk about what's going on in Rio. And joining us in studio is Rusty DeWeese. Rusty, good morning.
Mike, thanks for having me in. I just taped a commercial for the Oktoberfest, so I was walking by and waved at you.
Yeah, and I waved you in. So yeah. Thank you for joining us. I just wanted to get your opinion because it seems like I'm trying to understand the sort of thinking that went into these swimmers concocting a story in Rio. What's your take on that?
I haven't followed it real closely, so my take on it is, it's not a great thing to be drunk, I guess. That's number one. I know it isn't a good thing to vandalize anybody's property. Especially in a foreign country, but anywhere. I'm going to leave your studio just the way I found it. That's just how you brought up. So who knows? But this Ryan guy, he dedicated his whole life to one thing. It's pretty impressive. But other than that, might we look at ourselves and how we are looking at other things? And are we disappointed in him, or do we see ourselves in him when he's winning that gold medal? And now we're disappointed. Why do I care about him any more than, hey, he won the gold medal? I don't think that he is any type of person. Therefore, I am not let down when I hear this.
Mm-hmm.
He's just some guy. Okay, he's a guy that'll do that. Okay, I'm going to do my job today and see you later. Bye. It's not that interesting to me.
If you were if you were giving him some advice right now, what would you say?
Lotke?
Yeah.
If I was his advisor?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I would say, well, probably knowing that he's done this, I probably would have quit as his advisor years ago. Because there probably are patterns.
Yeah.
But if this is a one-time thing, I'd say, hey, man, we got to call Mike Smith. We got to call Dan Rather. We got to call Rachel Maddow. We got to call Bill O'Reilly and get on their shows and say, we did bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we will do whatever we need to do to make it right. And that's what I would say. I don't know if that
good.
Would be the
how case. Are things with you, by the way?
Things are great. Life is great. Summer, enjoying the summer. You look very summery with that yellow shirt. Summer is great. Life is going out to Burlington now to do some business and come home. I have the weekend to enjoy the weather. Just like, and I hope everybody else is, again, not getting so caught up in too much of this Ryan stuff or this Trump stuff or this other stuff and letting themselves breathe beyond that. But there is a time and a place for that, and that's what your show does.
Thank you very much.
See ya.
Okay, we'll see you later. When we come back, it's still Free for All Friday. Your phone calls. Give us a call. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's Free for All Friday, and we have people that sort of pop in. We have your phone calls on any subject that you would like. What we've talked about this morning is a little bit of everything. We've gone from Olympics to Bernie's finances to something that I think we should talk about at your convenience or anything else, which is, why did you support Sue Minter and Phil Scott? Why do you think they won? Be interested in your phone calls, as always, at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We're all over the map today because it's Free for All Friday. Let's go to Mike in Charleston. Mike, you're on Open Mic.
Yeah, Mike, a couple of questions, and you may have answered this. This guy that was from Fox News, have I heard any discussions from you or any of your call-ins here in the last month or so, about what he did or didn't do? My question is that something that should be discussed on your show?
Mike, I'm not sure I understand. I'm not sure I'm following who it is at Fox News that we're talking about.
Well, the guy that just got $55 million separation.
Oh,
all the sexual harassment things that he did to the people, staff, and stuff like that.
Yeah, Ailes is who we're talking about, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, I haven't addressed it. It's something that probably needs to be addressed at some point. And it is, if there's a attitude at Fox News that sort of encourages this, Mike,
yeah,
then that attitude's got to change real quick. I mean, that's unacceptable. And this is, Mike, you bring up a good point. Let's try to work that into this program at some point.
And the reason why the votes, I think, went for the large amount of votes that went for Sue over Matt Dunn was, I think, that some of Matt's advertisements didn't do great for him.
Thanks, Mike, for your phone call. It is Free for All Friday, and we're talking on any subject that you are interested in. We've hit on the Olympics and the sort of misbehavior of some Americans by making up a story. We've talked about Bernie and his finances, basically wagging his finger at other people and saying you've got to be transparent with your finances, but being a little less transparent with his own finances. And is it a sort of a rule now that you say, do as I say and not as I do? Or is it something different? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. And why do you think Sue Minter and Phil Scott won their respective primaries? Why did you vote for them or why didn't you vote for them? Give us a call. And then we've been talking with Free for All Friday. It's your show. Call in on any subject that you want. So give us a call. We've had calls that have ranged from Trump. We've had calls that range to Roger Ailes. We've had all sorts of calls dealing with
with various issues, including encryption. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Why did Sue Minter and Phil Scott win? Why did you vote for them, or why didn't you vote for them? Bernie Sanders and his finances seems to be a little cagey in how he's dealing with his finances. And that is surprising, given the fact that he's been wagging his finger at Hillary Clinton and saying, you got to be more open and transparent with your finances. And then the Olympians in Rio. What the heck are they thinking? Let's go to Ed in Berlin. Ed, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. I'd like to know what's the matter with the criminal justice system in this state. You know, back in
Hey, Ed, can you turn down your radio?
I believe it was in December. The Walmart pharmacy was robbed at gunpoint, and it was robbed again by the same guy this Monday, and they caught him yesterday, and they let him out again. And I'm just wondering, what is the matter with this criminal justice system? And you can get in a heck of a lot more trouble by having a motor vehicle violation than you can with an armed robbery. I don't understand this system at all. I'll let you respond to that. I'll listen to you. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Ed, for the call. Definitely, if there's people that are being released and then doing the same thing over and over again, there's a problem with that person, and maybe they should be locked up a little bit longer than they were the first time. Ed, you raise a good question. Let's go to Bill in Johnson. Bill, you're on open mic. Good morning, Bill.
Geez, I thought I was going to have to wait in line. Good morning. Well, Sue Minter, I think, is a reflection of the classics. A good organization, well-run campaign, field work, which is why those of us who are strongly in favor of our gun rights and also support Phil Scott need to take a wake-up call and get organized and make sure that we do the right things. And campaign work is day-to-day, difficult, staff, volunteer, grinding away. And I think that's why Minter, I always try to put an N in there, I think that's why she succeeded. Now, Phil Scott, of course, his majority was much stronger within his party than hers, and I think she also represents an extremist, progressive version of the Democratic Party in Vermont. You go to Shumlin and Kunin and Dean, and I don't think they represented that extremist, progressive wing, and I think that is going to be her downfall. That's my prediction.
Hey, thanks for your phone call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jack in Bridport. Jack, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. I didn't vote for Phil Scott, but I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was voting for change, and I hope that he brings some change, but I got my doubts. So that was the one thing. The other thing about Bernie, after he sold out to Hillary there and supported her, his supporters shouldn't have been surprised, because Dick Cheney had an old adage. You said you never trust a communist. And that's my comment for today.
Thanks, Jack, for your comment today. We're asking several questions, but it's Free for All Friday. This is your show. Bring up anything you want to bring up today. The number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We have a wide range of things we've been discussing, and they've ranged from why Sue Minter and Phil Scott won, to why you voted for them or why you didn't vote for them, to Bernie's finances. Being a little cagey with his finances when he's calling for other people to be transparent. And there seems to be hypocrisy in that sort of position. And our Olympians in Rio, what the heck were they thinking when they were making up a story? Give us a call. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's Free for All Friday. Any subject you want to bring up, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Talking about, perhaps through the entire show, this incident at the Olympics, where we had four Americans who concocted a story. It is my understanding that Ryan Lochte has issued an apology for making up the story, which he should have done. And he actually must have been listening to Rusty DeWeese, because Rusty DeWeese, who popped in and spent a few minutes with us, was saying that's what he should do, and do it as quick as possible. It has created an international incident because it's sort of falls into the stereotype that Brazilians have of Americans, that they're entitled, that they do things, that they put down other countries. And it falls into the stereotype of what Americans are trying to, are getting the impression in Rio, that it's lawlessness down there. So it has turned into an international event. Also, we've talked about Bernie Sanders and his finances. He's being a little cagey with his finances. He's being a little bit non-transparent, I guess, with his finances. At the same time, when he is calling other people to be transparent in theirs. And then there's Phil Scott and Sue Minter. Sue and Phil won their respective primaries. Why? And why did you vote for them, or why didn't you vote for them? Why do you think they won? So those are some of the things that we're discussing. But it's Free for All Friday. If you've got something else you want to discuss, this is the time to give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. You know, the Castleton Institute did a poll just before the primaries, and they didn't poll who was ahead or who was losing or who was winning. What they polled was likability. And one of the things that they found is that the two people who won, Phil Scott and Sue Minter, were the most likable candidates. And this certainly sort of plays it out, that being likable on the Republican side showed that it was worth more than $2 million. That's the amount that Bruce Lisman, the Wall Street executive who poured that much of mostly his own money into his failed attempt to defeat Phil Scott. So likability prevailed on that side of the primary, in the Republican side of the primary. But also, likability prevailed on the Democratic side, too, because that poll showed that Sue Minter was more liked than any of her competitors on the Democratic side. And Matt Dunn couldn't overcome that. And, of course, he did some things in the end. But he couldn't overcome that because he seemed to be too polished for his own good, and it seemed insincere on the issues. For example, he flip-flopped on his commitment not to use his own personal money to fund his campaign, and then he loaned his campaign $95,000. He was unclear in terms of where he was on win, too cute by half. So likability is a huge, huge factor in helping you get elected. But it isn't the only factor. And I'd be curious what you think are some of the other factors that either you voted for Sue Minter or Phil Scott, the reasons why you voted for them or the reasons you didn't vote for them. When we come to the general election, issues are going to be at center stage. And they can go from, as one caller said, gun control to the economy and jobs, to health care, to energy development, just to name a few. There's a lot of angst in Vermonters in terms of their economic welfare. And the candidates are going to have to address that issue in a meaningful way. And this just hasn't happened. This has been around since about 2008 when the markets crashed. They want
their politicians to make them feel secure. And so it's going to be interesting. The other thing is the presidential election is going to have an influence here in Vermont on who's going to be the next governor. And this is going to be mostly tricky for – most tricky for Phil Scott, because he's got to overcome whatever Donald Trump says on the campaign trail. Let's face it. Hillary Clinton's going to win this state big. The thing that Phil Scott has to make sure is that Donald Trump doesn't cut into him in any way. And he's done that. He's separated himself from Donald Trump. He way before anybody else did, he separated himself from Donald Trump, said he's not going to be supporting him. And his record as a moderate, pro-choice Republican that voted for marriage equality may help him in this regard. And lastly, believe it or not, Peter Shumlin, who won't be on the ticket, will probably be an issue in this campaign. You know, Shumlin isn't popular. And Minter was a senior member of his team. So that could have an impact on Minter. So a lot of things are weighing here in this election. And one of the things I wanted to get a sense from you out there is, why did you vote for Sue Minter and Phil Scott? Why do you think they won? Certainly would be, there are many factors. I just named a few. But I'd be interested in your comments. 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Tom in Moortown. Tom, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. I'm going back to yesterday. You had Louis Porter on.
Sure.
And I tried to get through and didn't quite make it, but I was...
A lot of callers call in, Tom, so it's hard to get in. I appreciate that you kept trying, and you're on now, so thank you.
Yeah. Well, the question I was going to ask Louis about is, how much lobbying do the insurance companies do here in Vermont as far as determining our antler permits and how many are put out? I know that in some places the insurance companies have a lot to do with that sort of thing as far as lobbying, because of all of the, when the animal count gets up, moose and deer, they have a lot of accidents. And I was just curious, I guess it'd be a little investigative type of thing.
Well, here's what I'll do, Tom. I'll write that down and ask him. He certainly will be on again at some point. There's going to be different issues that he'll be on, but I thank you. I was wondering where you were going with that, but basically what you're saying is, how much do the insurance companies have an influence on what the size of the deer herd and what sort of the conditions that they put on hunting because of accidents? Is that right?
Yeah, as far as the antlerless Sure. permits that are put out, like this year, they've jumped it way up to around 19,000, because we had one good winter, and most of us hunters think that's a little crazy. But I also know that the insurance companies, I believe, at least they used to, influence that type of thing quite a bit, because obviously more animals and more accidents, the more it costs them. And
there's,
I'm curious about that.
Tom, there's two things you said that I'm interested in. One is, why do you think jumping the permits is not a good thing? And number two, if the industry is more concerned about looking at accidents, wouldn't they want the Fish and Wildlife Department to keep the permits lower instead of jumping it?
I think if they issue more permits and put out more permits, they're going to thin out the herd more and go towards fewer accidents, road collisions.
I got it. Okay. But let's go with my first question then. Why you think it's the wrong direction going up in terms of permits?
Well, not so much going up, because we did have a mild winter, but they jumped it by quite a bit. I'm not, I don't have the exact number, but I mean, I believe it's more than doubled as far as the number of permits from last year to this year, and they're basing it on one winter, one mild winter, and I'm basing it on the fact that a lot of mild winters you'll see go with at least twins and sometimes triplets. And I've been seeing a lot of doe this year with a single fawn and some twins. So I'm not sure that the, you know, the deer are catching up just from one mild winter on the population. And I know that the, you know, the biologists out there and everyone knows more about this than I do, but that's the reason for my question, is there outside influence that's affecting this permit process for antler shooting the antlerless deer.
Tom, I'll ask that question if I have him back on. I thank you for your phone call. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Man, how did 2 hours go so fast? I won't be able to get to any more phone calls here. I apologize to that. This 2 hours has flown by today, and I do want to thank our guests today, which were Rusty DeWeese, who came in unexpectedly, and I appreciate that, and Lloyd Kosemer from the Middlebury New Filmmaker Festival. Looking at the clock, I got about 2 minutes left. I wanted to get to there was an interesting letter to the editor that I want to get to, and I'll try to get to it next week. It was called "It's Not Assault Rifles, It's a Culture That Glorifies Violence," and wanted to. This gentleman who wrote this has an interesting perspective, and I would say it's probably a fairly liberal perspective that comes at gun control in a much different way. And also, I wanted to get to what many national commentators are talking about is a column that Peggy Noonan wrote maybe a week ago that talks about how political and business elites are so detached from their decisions that they don't have an impact on these political and business elites, but they do have real impacts on everyday people. And these are business decisions or immigration decisions, as she uses in Germany as an example. So, you know, these are some of the things I want to bring up next week. Plus, your phone calls, and I do appreciate all your phone calls. We couldn't get them all in today, and I, you know, it is amazing the response we get for phone calls, and I really appreciate you being an active participant in this program, and I thank you so much. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. 85 years WDEV News Radio celebrating the future. WDEV AM 550 broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. Thank you for your phone calls. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk again on Tuesday.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com, and you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.